Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here.
Mike Cosentino over here.
And Gary LeMaster here.
Who's we're not going to be his own microphone this week.
Yeah, and we're going to let him talk as much as he wants.
Maybe.
That we agree to.
We got a good show.
Yeah, we're talking about how the Republican Party got to be what you see now. It's easy to turn on the debates and you see this contest of throwing mud at each other. You see this huge conflict where talking heads are saying the Republican Party may implode as a result of Trump. And we want to look back at the history of the Republican Party, the current Republican Party, how they came to this impasse. Now, if you're a reactionary party, let's go all the way back, even if you are on party. So if you're a slaveholder and you have a whole bunch of slaves, and most white people don't have slaves, how do you get them on your side? Because
1.6% of people had slaves.
Right.
So they fought a war.
I mean, and they got the white yeoman to fight the war for them, right?
Yeah.
With them.
Yeah.
And how do you do this? In other words, if you're a deeply reactionary party, and you represent certain special interests, and often it's the very, very wealthy that you're representing, the people who control industry, the plutocrats, the oligarchs, as the modern Republican Party does, you can't run on that. You can't run on, let's give a whole lot of money to rich people because, well, we want to give them a whole lot more money than they've got now.
That's a tough platform.
You know, so you have to come up with a language that will justify this, like, what do they call them? The job creators.
And
you have promises like trickle-down economics and stuff.
Well, givers and takers.
Yeah. God, guns, and gays worked real well. And it still does. God was on their side, and then family values, guns. That always turns out the base. Doesn't matter what other issues. That's how you get people to vote against their self-interest.
Four years ago, they ran Romney, a nice man, probably decent, very decent human being, but a total plutocrat. I mean, and what happened was he got recorded talking to his fellow super richy guys, and then people realized what they were actually thinking, and that kind of really undercut his story. So Gary's provided a detailed outline of human history for us today,
and as
usual, we'll start with it. But we want to understand what the Republican Party is and what reactionary parties are around the world. That there has to be two aspects: the elite aspect of control and invigorating the amount of money that the very wealthy have. Oh. And there has to be a populist aspect. You have to convince ordinary people that you're on their side.
Yes, very intellectual. And one of the things that the Republican Party did so well is have this whole anti-intellectual thing going, and certainly under George Bush. But we want to mention that there's this wonderful thing going around the internet that says, you know, the Democrats might not be perfect, but they're nuts.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's good. We want to mention that some of the information on today's show is going to come from a book called The Party is Over by Michael Lofgren, and I love the subtitle, How the Republicans Went Crazy and the Middle Class Got Shafted. And he does mention how the Democrats have been not a very effective opposing force. But we're going to talk about why that is a little later.
All right. So let's start with the history, Gary. We have the Republican Party. When did it start?
It's the second oldest political party to the Democrats, but it started in 1854. And it began to, as the primary reason for its existence was to combat the Kansas-Nebraska Act, which threatened to expand slavery into the Louisiana Purchase, basically.
So originally it was an anti-slavery party to a great degree, and it was a northern party, and it was a party of small businessmen, large businessmen, people who opposed slavery for a lot of different reasons, who opposed the expansion of slavery. Abraham Lincoln was famously a Republican. Right.
It absorbed two other parties, the Whigs and the Free Soil, which was the anti-slavery party. And it really, you know, became truly the party of Lincoln. And, you know, when Lincoln was elected, that's what began the Civil War, basically. You know, the South loves to even today talk about the War of Northern Aggression, but
started shooting first. Okay.
They fired the first shots, and they were apoplectic over Lincoln's election, because Lincoln ran on an anti-slavery platform.
I think it's fair to say it was a almost completely Protestant party. And mm-hmm. when Catholics immigrated to the United States, most of them would end up being Democrats, along with a lot of people in the South. The Democratic Party in those days was split between Southern Democrats and Northern Democrats, with very different values and very, very different views. And the Republican Party had a split with Teddy Roosevelt. So what happened with Teddy Roosevelt? Republican Party is chugging along. They're winning all the elections, and along comes Teddy Roosevelt, and he wins the election for president.
Yeah, Roosevelt did some interesting things that are very un-Republican now. The one thing that is similar to today's Republican Party is he continued William McKinley's foreign policy, which was very expansive. We were the exceptional nation, and so we were going to exert our will on others. But
it was almost the beginning of the whole American exceptionalism and exporting it.
Right.
Yeah, and exceptionalism as state a concept, and it was open imperialism.
Right.
You know,
right.
I mean, Europeans are imperialists. We should be imperialists too. We're late getting into the game. Let's catch up with them.
We're going to divide up Asia and much of the world, along with the Brits and the Spaniards. But Roosevelt did some things that would be, you know, just not considered Republican today. He broke up the monopolies. Huge corporations, Standard Oil being the greatest example. He is the one who initiated the national park system, federal lands.
An environmental protector. We don't often think of Republicans as that way.
Right.
The Republicans were big on environmental protection in those days. And in fact, until fairly recently, we're pretty much partners with Democrats in protecting the environment. You can go into the late 60s and 70s and 80s, and they're still pretty environmentally oriented.
Well, you could repeat what you said, that partners with the Democrats, that bipartisan activity was possible up until, and that's why we're having the show, up until the last.
Pretty recently.
So what happened? I mean, Teddy Roosevelt, with his anti-monopoly stuff and with his populist message, got into a fight with the Republican establishment. This is one of the first battles. So Teddy is a populist. He's run as a Republican, but the Republicans are turning to the right, you might say, and Teddy gets pissed off.
The Gilded Age Republicans were still around and still very much in power. But so Teddy broke away, started the Bull Moose Party, you know, ran against the Republicans and the Democrats, didn't win.
Well, that's when we learned a lot about the concept of third party and how it doesn't work.
Yeah.
So the Republicans took over again and basically, you know, held control with a northern coalition. The South was sparsely populated still at that time, and because there was no air conditioning and the and no slavery anymore. So
that'll do it.
They were in power until the Great Depression.
That's when the political parties became what's recognizable, what they are today, was with Roosevelt and the Great Depression. So Roosevelt gets elected, and his policies are really very moderate and not very extensive. But behind Roosevelt, underneath Roosevelt's election, is a mass labor movement. And threats from really left-wing parties like communists and the Wobblies and socialists and the populists and what else, Gary? Progressives.
Well, it's a time when you had shooting wars between the forces of the owners of the Gilded Age, the corporate masters, and the labor movement. You had shooting wars in places like San Francisco, Seattle, Minneapolis, all the way over to Blair Mountain in West Virginia.
Yeah. Lofgren, in his book The Party Is Over, does call it a war without bullets.
Right. Well, in many cases, it was with bullets.
Now, modern. Yeah. So far.
Yeah.
So far. I don't know.
So what happens is Roosevelt is a different kind of populist. He's from the Eastern establishment, from the New York establishment, and what he puts in place are a whole lot of
institutions. We're talking about the Depression era. We've got to use the word. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What in the Depression, he uses the Depression to institute most of the stuff that we know now.
Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid came along under the Johnson administration, but Social Security was probably the big flashpoint of the early Roosevelt years. He did the work camps, put people back to work building infrastructure.
WPA, if you go around the Sedona area, so many of the hiking trails were all built by the WPA. The buildings in the national parks were built by the WPA.
You'll see a lot of WPA buildings in Prescott.
Yeah. So what Roosevelt does is, and in some ways, the left has always complained that he headed off a revolution by taking government and using government to help everybody, to help the little guys. That's what he did. He supported when the strikers struck, he supported them rather than opposing them. He didn't take sides with the plutocrats and stuff, and it made him deep, deep personal enemies. The things that he did empowered both white people and black people. Right.
He was very popular. Obviously, he was elected four times. Yeah. We have the term limits for president as a result of FDR's elections.
So, there's a famous quote from Eisenhower. I don't have it in front of me, but Eisenhower accepted all the changes that Roosevelt had put in, all the reforms, all the, the economic and social safety net. He accepted that, and he couldn't believe that anybody in the Republican Party would oppose it, except, he said, he called them millionaires, and those are a few millionaires from Texas. And he said, those guys are stupid. Yeah. He accepted the basic changes and the reform.
Well, Eisenhower's administration had, this of course is following World War II, we're paying off the debt from the war, but the top tax rate for the U.S. During the Eisenhower administration was 91%.
And it was the period of greatest economic development in the United States.
Well, they knew. The founding fathers knew, and then they continued to be known economically that great concentrations of wealth was a sure way to destroy democracy. And some people would think that's exactly what's happening.
There was a hint of the Republican Party to come during the Eisenhower administration because he got elected because he embraced the evangelicals. And that was a period when we added under God to the Pledge of Allegiance.
Right,
we changed the motto on currency from E Pluribus Unum, which means from many one, to In God We Trust. He basically made a pact with the evangelicals
It's the pressure really from the Cold War is driving a lot of this. Is the period of McCarthy, and it took Eisenhower a long time to come around to some sort of stand against McCarthy. It's a nasty period, and it's going to lead to Goldwater. And Goldwater is a populist revolt. The Republicans, who are not really benefiting by Republican economic policies, they're not benefiting and they're not happy with what's happening. And unlike Eisenhower, they oppose almost everything that's happened, not only with Franklin Roosevelt, but also with Teddy Roosevelt. They don't like any of it. It's a deeply reactionary movement, and they take over the Republican Party and they get the nomination.
Well, I do want to go back to what Gary said about when the Republicans talk about the United States being a Christian nation, it does have history, but it goes back to Eisenhower, not the founding fathers.
All these things were added.
Well, you say, and they offer, is that, well, we have God on our money, we have God on our courtrooms, we have God, we put our hands on the Bible. All these things, many of these things go back, but they don't go back to the founding fathers. The last thing in the world Jefferson would have wanted, and that's what they were afraid of mostly, Jefferson and Franklin, was the government. That's why there is no mention anywhere in the Constitution about anything about religion or God.
One of the bits of trivia at the time is, you know, we now have been for years fighting the Ten Commandments plaques in public places and in courthouses. Well, if you really look into it, that occurred during the Eisenhower administration. Cecil B. DeMille, you know, did a movie called The Ten Commandments, and as a promotion for the movie, he had plaques, monuments made and distributed to counties and cities and states and, you know, courthouses across the country. And, you know, now they're considered sacrosanct. You know, how dare you take these down? But they were little more than
a
Hollywood promotion.
So
that's America,
Goldwater,
maybe,
loses the election terribly. And LBJ institutes the Great Society. And the Great Society, you see, when Roosevelt instituted his reforms, they were seen as benefiting everybody. When LBJ, when Lyndon Johnson instituted his Great Society, it was seen as benefiting black folks, minorities of all kinds, Native Americans, recent immigrants. It wasn't seen as helping white people, and particularly white men. And white men had been in control. When I was young, you assumed if you were a white male, you had preference for any kind of job and stuff. So I think that in my reading, what happens is then there's the women's movement, women's equality. So if there are 10 jobs out there and half of them go to women, then half of them don't go to white males. And we begin to see the beginnings of the white male revolt that has come down here. And it is true that there were losses. And it takes a while for them to see that if they don't have as many jobs or make as much money because they pay women the same as men, that their wives now have opportunity and wouldn't make as much money as they do, and so the family is actually rich. You have to begin to look at a broader view. And what we see, I think, you guys can take this, but what I see from in the Republican Party and some of its supporters is this very narrow definition of what benefits you. It's not a generous benefit of, like, let's be fair to everybody in the society. Lyndon Johnson thought we'll help all these people and everybody will jump on board because it's just just, it's fair, it's honest, compassionate.
It's American.
It didn't happen.
Well,
yeah.
At the time that the Great Society was put in place by Johnson, it was the Civil Rights Act of 64 was, you know, another one of the things. And when he signed that, he said we'll have lost the South for a generation, for the Democratic Party. But you have to think about what the conditions were at that time. We were two generations removed from the Civil War and from slavery. So across the country, you had the slave migration to the north that were, you know, put in low paying jobs and in factories and in slaughterhouses and so on. And you had the former slaves and their children and grandchildren in the South. You know, when the emancipation came, the slaves had nothing. And, you know, a lot of people want to believe that we gave them 40 acres and a mule, right? But that never really happened. It started to happen and then was rescinded. So you had a huge population across the country that Johnson was trying to address that literally had nothing.
I think as Americans, we like to think that everything is always a positive movement in the future. But you have the liberation of the slaves, and then you have the institution of Jim Crow. You have the Great Society, and then you have Ronald Reagan.
But all of this is groundwork for the Southern strategy. We're talking about the Republican Party, boys and girls, and I refer you to your outline on your desk here. Let's talk about the Southern strategy. It was brilliant. It won elections from 1968 to 1988. It won the Republicans 5 out of 6 Republican elections because you guys just laid the groundwork. How do we get those disaffected voters, those people that actually vote, and they did it so with the Southern strategy?
This is when the two parties basically swap platforms. The names basically changed. You know, the Southern Democrats took on the name of the Republicans, and the Northern Republicans took on the Democratic name. Lee Atwater was the guy behind it in the 70s that led the GOP outreach. He called it the Southern Strategy. Led the GOP outreach to the racist Southern Democrats.
Well, plays on a racial resentment, right?
Right.
The Republican Party has played on it subtly for a long time on racial resentment.
Until Trump. Now it's pretty overt.
Now it's overt. And that's the problem that the Republican Party is facing today, right, Mike?
Yeah.
Is that Trump is making overt and obvious things that they've always disguised, Gary.
Right.
I mean, what did they call it? Didn't they have a different phrases for it?
I don't know what you're talking about for sure, but what they did was take in what were called the Blue Dog Democrats, and you had who was that? I didn't put it on my notes. The famous Democrat in North Carolina or in the Carolinas who Jesse Helm was one of those Southern Democrats who became a staunch Republican and fought things.
And so in the South, the Democrats became the party of young people, urban folks, and black people, and the rest of the South, the white Americans, based, I think, not so much on racism, but as on a kind of racial resentment. This is, you know, we're losing something. They didn't see this as positive, flooded into the Republican Party. So there's almost no Democratic Party functioning in many places in the South now.
At almost the same time, you had the moral majority that came, you know, during the Nixon and Reagan years when the party reached out to Southern Protestant evangelicals. Ralph Reed was and Jerry Falwell were two of the the leaders of that movement.
And that's because there's a change in social values, right? The 60s bring a challenge to traditional ideas of marriage and everything else, to all kinds of traditional ideas, particularly around sex. It brings challenges, and the response is the moral majority. We are sticking to the old morality. You guys can go and do the new morality. But we don't think that's even morality.
What we know mostly as evangelicals were the evangelicals of the Confederacy of the South, and so it was a further consolidation of
Catholics. They got so
that
many.
That came a bit later.
Christian sects, but it became a quite a force, and I knew it would be a voting force, and they chose this name. It made them feel better than everyone else. And so it became part of the divide and conquer. Certainly, if you told this, just like in third grade, when you had the blue-eyed kids and the brown-eyed kids, and you told the blue-eyed kids that they were better than the brown-eyed kids, was a whole change of behavior. There was a whole change of behavior in the divide and conquer strategy when you started calling one segment of the American population much more moral than another.
And the real Americans were just small group. Recent immigrants not included, black folks not included, Latinos not included. Real Americans were basically, and it probably started out as they were white Protestants, but expanded to white Catholics.
Well, that's it. And then you had Nixon, who learned his dirty tricks. He, as Gary said, he felt like he was defeated in 60 because of tricks. So he learned a lesson. So by 68, he was going to out-trick the tricksters. And that was a divide and conquer. And the other thing that they did very well, is attack the messenger. The Republicans have always attacked the media. They called it the liberal media from early on.
That really began with Nixon and Agnew.
Exactly.
Those two looked at the political landscape, and they decided to marginalize those on the left and marginalize those on the right, the remnants of the John Birch Society, and they kept using terms like the great silent majority.
Right.
And they attacked the media, which at that time the media was bound by at least the broadcast media was bound by the Fairness Doctrine, which meant that they had to operate in the public interest, and in short, they had to tell the truth. They had to report the truth.
That's right.
And when that was done away with, this is one of my longtime problems.
Right.
When that was done away in the late 80s under H.W. Bush, it was repealed. It opened up the airwaves, particularly AM radio, for right-wing, what I call hate talk radio. It became dominant within 4 years. Right-wing talk radio had become 92% right-wing hate radio.
Exactly. That's part of that Republican Party coalition, part of that GOP coalition that has worked so well. We have the party things that we're talking about. We're talking about the talk radio. We're talking about Fox News. We're talking about the Family Research Council. We're talking about the Heritage Foundation. They put together this a coalition over these very years that we're talking about to be this very powerful political force. And then when you take away any incentive or any compromise, any wish to, because it's much sexier. It's much sexier to have politics of opposition. It's much sexier to call, to be anti-liberal and anti-gay and anti-government. That's the compromise, which is, don't forget, the system doesn't work that they set up, that the Founding Fathers set up, without compromise. And so most politicians over the last 200 years got it. They knew that. And that's one of the reasons some of us were not politically active. We didn't see a whole lot of difference between Republicans and Democrats. Nobody's going to cut education funds. Nobody's going to try to not feed children. Nobody's going to cut food stamps. Nobody's going to let old people die in misery and indignity, by taking away their Social Security. That's not going to happen. We put all this together, and it's a really good thing. Then all of a sudden we have these That was why Lofgren called them crazy. They want to attack Social Security. They want to shut down schools. And this is.
But they always say they have reasons, right? They're going to privatize
ideological
Social Security.
Reasons, but we're talking about yes, exactly. And so
they never say we're going to get rid of it. They don't say we're going to get rid of Medicare. They say we're going to have vouchers.
We're going to reduce the deficit or something.
You can kind of predict where the Republican Party is going to go on those issues. Where if you look at large pools of money that the plutocrats can't get their hands on, like Social Security and the funds for Medicare,
right. They're
going to try to change policies to be able to get their claws into that money so they can invest it and manipulate.
We've talked about this before about Social Security. Privatizing Social Security would mean a boon of billions of dollars of fees to the investment industry.
Right.
Yeah, it would make Social Security less efficient and more expensive. And it would disorganize everything.
That was one of the reasons for the doing away with pension funds. By the way, defined pension benefit, pensions is that these were large pools of money that the investors couldn't invest. You know that it was being controlled by.
So what happened? The Republicans dominate the presidency for the Reagan years.
Well, sure. Then we don't forget trickle down started during and still there today. I mean, it's still in the minds of a lot of people. You talk to relatives, they believe that if we take rich people's money away or if we tax them at any rate, that would seem normal.
So there's a systematic ideology. If you tax the rich, there won't be jobs.
There won't be jobs. Right.
And,
right.
And that's not, when you look at the history of the United States, this is not true.
Never true. Not even true once.
Trickle-down economics. Never ever worked.
Never
trickles down. Cutting taxes never produces more income for the government.
Reagan.
It never produces a high rate of economic growth. It has never ever worked a single time. But it's still there.
It's still there.
Reagan's own advisors who implemented trickle down have since recanted and said
it does not work.
Even
his own economic advisors say trickle down never worked. It was a good way to make your friends richer. But then you had
That's right. Now, wait a minute, Mike. That's
yes,
right.
Well, that's right.
The actual effect of trickle-down economics is to cut the tax rate on the very wealthy.
Yes.
It's not about trickling down to ordinary folks.
And George
it's
Bush
about
finally.
Cutting the tax rate. The same way with their fight for a balanced budget.
Yeah.
All the Republican proposals that we see coming from the candidates will increase the deficit. By cutting taxes so much, they're going to increase the deficit. They don't really care about that. What they care about is what?
It's
cutting taxes.
When you say increase the deficit, I want to make this clear. The three leading Republican candidates, their tax economic proposals would increase the debt, the U.S. federal debt, by somewhere between, well, depending on the candidate, between $8.2 trillion and $11.2 trillion over a decade.
So are they really interested in the debt, or are they really interested in cutting taxes? Now, I want to ask you guys, what happens when a Democrat gets elected president? Well, Clinton and Obama. What's the response from these folks when an actual Democrat gets in office, even if it's a very moderate sort of conservative Democrat? What happens?
Like Obama, obstruction and what I like to term scandal-rama. You know, it's let's search for scandals, gin up as many scandals as we possibly can, and keep them on the defensive while, you know, it's like, you know, don't look behind the curtain. What we're really doing. Look at this instead. Look at this scandal.
That's it. The Benghazi's a hoax. The emails are a hoax. And everybody knows it except those poor white, it doesn't matter, middle class white, my buddies, quite frankly, down at the coffee shop, all believe Benghazi is a big deal. They all believe Hillary is criminal because of the email.
They think there's something really wrong with Hillary
Clinton. Defining scandal-rama.
But they can't really say exactly what. I mean, you can go to the emails, but if you actually look at the emails, you don't get a thing. But they did this to Clinton, too. There was all these phony scandals before they actually had Monica Lewinsky.
Travelgate, Whitewater. They got all furious. You know,
there was something with the
contract with America was the 94 mantra, and it worked very well as far as the
language. They did the same way with Obama. We have done the show and talked about Benghazi. We talked about Solyndra. We've talked about all these phony scandals. None of them added up to anything.
I'd point out that there's a story released yesterday that about Hillary's emails that the last five secretaries of state, beginning with Madeleine Albright, Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice, Hillary, and the current one,
John Kerry,
all have used private email servers. They've recently discovered that there were now classified information on the servers or in the emails of all five of them.
So we've got another phony scandal.
Hillary's the only one who released hers. The others have not.
But what I wanted to get at, too, is when people like Clinton are elected and Obama's elected, there's this deep fear that they'll actually do something that they don't want.
Their agenda.
Right. And so what we have is from the very beginning, Clinton they try to delegitimize him as president. They refer to him as your president, not the president of the United States. And they've done that with Obama since he got in. Mm-hmm. Part of the policy is to do that. Why are they so destructive, you know, Gary and Mike? Why do they not just stick to opposition policy? Based on arguments and discussions and
policy debates and compromise. You can really look back at Newt Gingrich's term as speaker as kind of the genesis of the anger and hate in politics today. He put out memos, you know, of terms that you should, if you're a Republican, you should use, that were, demeaning of Democrats, things that had never been used before, it was always policies before, but he put out things that talking about failed, presidencies, et cetera. At the same time, he instituted this policy of what is really a European parliamentary type party system, where you have to vote as a bloc or you will be attacked in the primaries.
So there's been a lot of changes, right, Mike? But they add up to this delegitimization of the president, denying. I mean, it's a veiled language. They don't say we don't like Obama because he's African American. They say he wasn't born in America. He has
pals around with terrorists.
Yes, all of that. Why did they go to this extreme? Because they can't win an actual argument on economics.
Hawaii's part of Kenya. This is a party that shut down the government twice under Democratic presidents. In other words, this is the party that, while they control the legislature, now this is so far, at least most of the GOP has figured out that this is a failed strategy. But under Clinton and under Obama, they shut down the government.
Cruz damaged
the full faith and credit. This is the economic responsible party. This is not the tax and
spend. But they caused us billions of dollars.
They destroyed the full faith and credit of the United States internationally. Nobody's ever done that before.
Why didn't it cost them? They cost us billions of dollars. They attacked the credit of the United States, and yet they pay no price for doing it.
Exactly. They should. That alone, those two acts alone, should have them out of power for the next, five generations.
Should, but they're not. I mean, they're running on the same kind of stuff. I mean, has anything changed, guys? This lineage of using code words.
Right. To homeland.
Demean
absolutely.
People and
family values. All of these, and that's why, I mean, the Family Research Council, the Heritage Foundation, the, what are the name? Americans for Prosperity, the Koch groups, they've got the language down where the, like I said, the Lofgren says the Democrats are tongue-tied. When
most,
it comes to this kind
most of,
the
conservative and some of the Democratic think tanks are not think tanks, they're a propaganda organization. Sure. Their job is to come up with phrases that will make things that are probably be unpalatable sound palatable.
Exactly.
There's two things I'd like to point out. One is that just an example of the obstruction under, it began, as you said, under Clinton, but under Obama. The so-called moderate Senator Kyle, Republican from former Republican from Arizona, on one day early in the Obama administration, personally blocked 97 judicial appointments by standing in front of a mic saying, "I object, I object, I object." And shortly afterwards, actually within days, he was bemoaning the shortage of federal judges. After the shootings in Tucson.
This is one of the moderates, right?
Right, and this is one of the so-called moderates. So, but the other point I'd like to make is there's a really interesting series of articles in The Atlantic by James Fallows, who, you know, when we talk about the anger and the populism in the politics and the, you know, nationally, Fallows has flown around in his little private plane. He'd been out of the country for some time, and he decided to see what was really going on with politics in the U.S. So he has flown from one community to another, to another, to another. And what he finds is there's great anger amongst especially middle-aged whites about the direction of the U.S., yet they continue, when he presses them on it, they continue to say that, well, you know, that's the rest of the U.S. Here everything's just fine. You know,
right.
In our county, you know, we have good leaders here, and that's and right. In our county, you know, everything's doing fine, and the, you know, we don't have a lot of unemployment, we don't have a lot of problems, crime has been going down, et cetera. It's been one after another, and he's found that across the U.S.
When I worked, one of the guys said, well, you know, it's people on the take, people not working. And I said to him, he said, you know, you and I both work. Do you know anybody around here who's not working? And he went, no. But often the cities, and he said, I hate to say this, there are black people who are not working.
There you go.
That's how it works. There's some place over there. That people are not working.
As much as I hate to break up this love fest here, I want to make sure I get this stuff in before the end of the show. We want to thank all those who contributed to keeping this show on the air. We couldn't be doing these things if it wasn't for the wonderful fundraiser we had the other day, the membership of the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, Jim and Rita Ledbetter, and all of those people who came and bought our wine auction. And
broke bread with us.
Broke bread with us. So it was actually we have
a great feast. We have once a year.
It is a bacchanal of
Democrats.
Lots of wine,
epic proportions, and a few Republicans in this case. We actually let some in the room and fed them, and
we do have water for them.
and some independents.
Give them bread and water. The Democrats of the Red Rocks. One of our sponsors want to invite you to join their St. Patrick's Day celebration. I will be there. I'll be making cupcakes. I've been told. I'd show up. That's right.
Okay. We'll avoid the cupcakes.
There will
right,
be.
Gary,
there will be no substances in them. Payback over here is laughing because I know what he's thinking. This is Saturday, March 12th at the Posse Grounds Hub.
Do you have a prescription, by the way, for medical marijuana? Is that what we're looking at?
That's just a minor detail in some people's lives. The March 12th at the Posse Grounds Hub. 525 Posse Grounds Road. This is a wonderful art facility that's out there run by Kate Hawks. If you're unfamiliar with it, please get familiar with it. So people talk about the arts in Sedona all the time. Here's one of a chance to really support the arts out at the Sedona Posse Grounds Hub. If you'd like to contribute to keep Democratic Perspective on the air, or just give us some money so we spend more time in bars and we'll get off the air. Right now, we'd be drinking down at the Sundowner if we had more money. You can contact our website, bvid.org. What's our BVID? Actually, Verde Valley Independent Democrats.org works better than bvid.org, but either way, you'll get to our website, and you can listen to some of our great old shows. I was listening to some of our old shows the other day, and they're pretty damn good.
I think the thesis that I think that we all agree on is that Trump's appeal is a logical result of decades of GOP efforts to discredit government, because government can alter things in favor of the people, and to attack party leadership.
Yeah,
and if you want to,
and encourage a kind of passive resistance to racism. So, what we see in Trump is things that were implicit and being disguised, right, Gary? Being explicit.
And if you want to see an example of what this ideology does, just take a look at Kansas under Brownback, Wisconsin under Walker, etc.
See you, folks. See you next time. Please, we'll continue this conversation. Thank you.
And listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.